Accession number 30641, Mr. John Lindsay, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Lindsay?
I was born in Düsseldorf on the 26th of December 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yes, my father, Georg, was born in Elberfeld, E-L-B-E-R-F-E-L-D, in 1887. His father was a part owner of a textile factory. He died when George was only 5 years old. And his mother, who was Jewish, then married the other partner, whose name was Hobby, and who was a Christian. And my father was brought up in that religion. So he knew nothing about the Jewish religion whatsoever. They had another son named Richard, who was not Jewish at all, and he survived the war. My mother, Frieda, was born in Berlin in 1893 and was the daughter of Justizrat, J-U-S-T-I-Z-E-R-A-T, which is the equivalent of a QC over here. And his wife, they had four daughters and one son. They lived in Berlin Tempelhof, which was considered to be an upmarket area. My father, having completed his studies in jurisprudence in Bonn and Heidelberg universities, he was articled to Justizrat Lewinsky in Berlin, his mother, one of the five children, my mother, and he fell in love with Frieda, one of the daughters, but as she was Jewish, although not at all religious, the friendship was, to say the least, discouraged by his parents. Nevertheless, they conducted a clandestine relationship, which is evidenced by correspondence which still exists. They married in 1915, by which time my father had qualified to escape parental disapproval. They moved from Berlin, as far away from Berlin as possible, and the chosen destination was Düsseldorf, where my father practiced as a solicitor and was active at the court as well. My parents' firstborn son died after a few days, and my mother decided then to be baptized because she wanted to be buried near him. So she was baptized into the Lutheran Church, of which my father was already a member. Then two more girls were born. Eva Maria was born in 1917 and Edith in 1919, who were both baptized at birth, just after birth, and later on confirmed. On the 26th of December 1922, I'm told the Christmas tree was lit with real candles, as one had in those days, and the curtains caught fire, and I was born rather prematurely. I'd never found out how premature. I was baptized into the Lutheran Church as Wolfgang Carl Gustav Lindemeyer, Carl Gustav being one of my father's very best friends, who was a children's poet, writer, and Carl Adrian, who was quite a well-known poet, but he died in the First World War.
And what do you remember of your childhood?
Well, not an awful lot, really. I don't know why. I think I've rather decided to put it out of my mind. I remember that in Germany in those days, you didn't go to school until the age of six. I remember going to my first school, which was right opposite the church to which we used to go. And I had four uneventful years there. So I would have been 1928 to 1932 or so. And from there, my father decided that I should go to a gymnasium. What's known in Germany as a gymnasium, which is not a gymnasium, of course, at all, but a sort of grammar school type of thing. And I must have gone there in 1932. We still lived in Düsseldorf on the other side of the Rhine. And I had a fairly easy time in my primary school, and then slowly in the gymnasium things began to change.
Now, in what way?
Well, one
felt a
bit of a
Christian.
Absolutely. I knew and I still knew nothing about the Jewish religion whatsoever.
So although you were Jewish, you
but there because was no, of my mother's...
There was no cultural or religious significance.
No, I don't really had no. No, I had one Jewish friend, but I didn't have many friends anyway.
Now, why did things begin to change? Did other people know you were of Jewish origin?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was generally known.
So how did the anti-Semitism develop? Was it with the advent of Hitler in 1933?
Yes, in 1933 it slowly developed.
And what forms did it take that you noticed?
Well, I suppose I was shunned to some extent in my class. And I didn't do at all well. And then my father, who was, as I said, was a solicitor. He lost his license as a solicitor in 1933 and wasn't allowed to practice anymore. And he had next door no income, but he was a sort of consultant, but didn't do very well. Quite apart from that, he was also a writer. And he was much happier sitting at his desk writing historical books and poems, poetry. And things financially got very tough. And so my mother in 1935, I suppose, started a small business selling cleaning materials and soaps and all that sort of thing to friends and relations. Well, friends, actually, there were no relations.
His writing wasn't making much money then?
It was making no money at all.
He was enjoying it, but...
He was enjoying it. He was trying to sell it to various film companies, but he didn't succeed. One book was actually published, a book of poems, which I still have. And so my mother built up this business from home, and I, when I got home from school, because in Germany you had no afternoon school, you went home after lunch, I had to get the bicycle out and deliver this stuff. So I didn't even awful lot of time for homework. But we were well supported by a few Jewish friends and so-called Aryan friends, who bought, I think, more out of pity than anything else. That didn't bring in an awful lot of money, so my mother decided to extend it to include chocolates and all that, everything that's related to the chocolate business. And although the two didn't really mix, but nevertheless, so she managed to keep her head above water.
Now, at school, how were things going? I mean, how were you doing at school?
Badly. In fact, I was referred one year because I was doing my... Whether there was prejudice or whether... Because I was really... I think partly it was my own fault. I was born idle.
And were there any really subjects encouraged. You liked or was it just you disliked everything?
I think I disliked school in toto.
What did you dislike about it? I mean...
Well, you know, school in Germany is so different to school in England. You go from 8 till 1 and there's no social aspect to it at all, except in the breaks. And I never really made no friends in my class at all because of my position. I don't think there were any other Jewish children in the class, not that I remember. And
did you find that the anti-Semitism was forcing your family back towards the Jewish community?
No, certainly not. Definitely not. Under no circumstances. My mother became very religious, and hence this plaque in the church in Düsseldorf. My father, not quite so, but he was politically active, which wasn't good, as a socialist, which wasn't perhaps quite the best thing to do as well.
How active was he?
Well, he was a member. He went to meetings, but he took no administrative or active part. And
now you were still very fairly young, 12, you know.
Yes.
So what happens next? Right?
So
what's
comes
next
comes 1936, by which time my mother decided it was time her children went abroad, and they as well if they could. And so there was in London an organisation called Inter-Aid Committee for
the Inter-Aid
Committee for Jewish children of for Christian children of Jewish origin or something like that, which was in Bloomsbury Square in London. And my sister Edith, who was the younger sister of the two, older than I am, first went to England in early 1937. I followed in May.
And what arrangements? How did you secure emigration? You know, I mean, you'd only be about 15.
Yes.
Do you remember 14. How it was done?
Well, you had to get a permit, of course, and you had to get a letter from the Hitler Youth, which I still have somewhere, to say that you're not a member and you're allowed to travel abroad. And my mother took me to England, and in those days we were only allowed 10 marks, which is a pittance. But she took me to England, where we were met by the woman who was our nanny as children, who was totally Christian, but had got a Jewish boyfriend whom she married, and they lived in England. And she met us at the station in London, and we went on to a school which would have been arranged for us.
A
boarding school called Magdalen College School.
Magdalen.
M-A-G-D. College School in Brackley, which had a vague association with Magdalen College School in Oxford. Very vague.
Now, what were your first impressions of this school?
Well, of course, I was overwhelmed because I couldn't speak English.
Not at all?
No, with just a few words I picked up, and I couldn't. And at the school, there were two other German boys. One was a refugee whose English was atrocious. Well, he came a little later. And another one who was the son of some German diplomat in London, who was Aryan, of course. And the headmaster of the school was a parson, and it was quite a religious sort of school. We went to church every day, to chapel every day, and twice on Sundays. It was not a very good school.
How did you fit in there?
Reasonably well. I was sort of accepted. I was much more accepted than the other chap. They always made fun of him, but his English was so atrocious, and used to teach him square words, which are totally not in existence. But I was treated quite reasonably. I don't know why, but I suppose I was very fortunate. I picked up the language pretty quickly, because the only condition on which I went to England was that I'd come home for my holidays in 1937. June, July, which I did, and my sister, younger sister, came over as well.
And what was it like going back to, you'd only been away a couple of months?
That's right, yes. I just went back, mainly because at that time there was a very interesting exhibition of electric equipment, I suppose, and they had the first television on show there, and of course I wanted to see that. I think it was one of the reasons I wished to go back. And my sister was there as well, and we rather annoyed our parents by speaking English rather than German, because she was pretty good as well. And back to school on my own this time.
Now, how did you do academically at this school?
Mediocre, I would say. So, well, I won two prizes, one for French and one for Latin, which I still have somewhere. But in those days, I fancied myself to become an engineer. So one of the books was on engineering. Games-wise, I didn't do terribly well. I managed to rise to the position of scorer for the first cricket team, which was rather nice because you went to other schools and you got a slap-up tea, which is more than you'd got in the school because the food was pretty grim.
Did you play football or rugger?
Rugger during the week, football on Sundays.
Any good or did you not like it?
Average, and did a lot of cross country running, which I absolutely loathed. And Sundays we were allowed out for walks on our own.
Did you encounter any anti-Semitism at the school? Because there's plenty of people in England as well as
none at all. In fact, they were very friendly. I was invited home for weekends. Well, at half term. Sometimes to a chap who lived in Banbury, we had a big pub there, and generally I was pretty well treated, and
And no anti-German feeling either, which is...
Not really, no. They weren't interested in that sort of thing. They were interested in cricket and backing horses and all the things you shouldn't be doing, and having bicycles and having a big tuck room where people had their tuck boxes, and of course I didn't have one, so I felt a bit odd man out. But they supplied me with things because for Sunday afternoon tea, it was customary to produce your own supplementary food. They provided the bread and marge or whatever it was. I think it's a ghastly system. I think it should be allowed. I don't know whether it still exists. But we had a tuck room upstairs to which the teachers were not admitted. And that's where they all read their sex books, because they weren't admitted in school either. And I was lodged in a dormitory, alas, over above the headmaster's study. And we got up to the usual things that one gets up to in public schools. Well, I can hardly call it a public school, but it was. And I made a few friends.
You seem to have enjoyed it more than you'd enjoyed your German.
Oh, indeed, very much. And of course, it was more of a challenge, really, to catch up. And I was ahead in German, in French, I suppose, and my pronunciation was reasonable, whereas my French teacher's pronunciation was bloody awful. Marvellous, fantastic man, but I'll come to him back to him later during the war. And all the teachers were reasonably nice, but I was no genius, I can assure you. I had a very average report. Could do better if you tried, is the only report I still have, which I think described it very adequately. Now, it comes 1938. Again, I went back to Germany for a holiday in the summer. And
you noticed any changes or the situation?
Yes, my parents' position was much worse. But in the meantime, my mother had an uncle, brother of her mother, who was a very eminent professor in Göttingen. And my elder sister, in fact, when this chap's wife died, my elder sister went to live with him to keep him company. And he left the house and everything that went with it to my sister, and my sister then gave it to my mother because she was about to emigrate as well. So things became easier in Germany, but all the time our parents tried desperately to emigrate.
And what was stopping them?
The Germans weren't stopping them, no. Stopping them was, in England you had to have a job to go to, and they didn't know anybody. And they had applied for an American affidavit, and my father was on the short list for some studio or other in Beverly Hills because he had submitted a script which they quite liked, but decided in the end they couldn't produce, so that didn't materialize because there was no promise. So came 1939.
Now, what about any effects of Kristallnacht?
On me personally, no. On them,
no,
yes.
On them,
of course. My elder sister was still there, so she told me about it. But they were hidden by good Aryan friends and survived quite well. But, of course, I forgot to mention that in the meantime they'd moved from their flat where I was born to a lesser flat in the middle of town to save the rent, and then they moved again. They moved three times to economize, and of course the children had left more slowly, didn't need quite that much room, and life was very tough for them. In Germany in those days there was a thing called the Winterhilfe, which is sort of help for assistance for down and outs or poor people anyway, and you got coupons and used to go once a week to collect a pound of marge or some frozen fish or whatever, which we had to do because we had to supplement our rations somehow. And another funny incident, I don't know whether you've come across this before, but a law came out must have been in 35 or so, that once a month everybody had to prepare a meal in one pot, and you weren't allowed to have anything else. And they used to come round and check up. You said, "Oh, go in the kitchen and lift the lid and make sure everything you had that meal was in my blood, and whatever money you saved, they collected for charity."
This actually happened.
Oh yes, everybody was subject to that. rather fun in a way, because it was quite nice to sort of stew with all the things, bits and pieces in it.
Now, you said into 1939, and you're still at the school.
So I was still at school, and I was to stay there until I took my matric. But then the funds ran out. In the meantime, my parents tried desperately to get out of Germany. My older sister came over in May 39 and lived with a Christian sect, which was extraordinarily strict. She lived with them for a while and eventually lived with a vicar in North Allerton, because my other sister had got to know their daughter, and she arranged for them, for her to live there. But she was very unwell when she came over. Well, I came in 39. I was on holiday in 39. Incidentally, I haven't talked about my holidays at all in England. I was introduced to a parson in Chute in Wiltshire. Or was it Hampshire? No, it's Wiltshire. It's not far from Andover. And an elderly couple who had no children. He was a parson, was a country, typical country parson, who was interested in gardening, and was an international chess player. And vaguely interested in religion as well, I think. His wife was used to be a French teacher. She studied in France, and an ardent stamp collector, and I collected stamps. Anyway, the committee arranged for me to have my holidays with them, and I had very enjoyable holidays in the vicarage in Hampshire, and they took me all over England. They were my mainstays in England for holidays, although previous to that, I had been to Bournemouth to stay in a boarding school for one holiday.
Now, 39.
In 39, summer holidays, I stayed with a parson in Retford.
In Nottinghamshire.
In Nottinghamshire, yes, who had two daughters. But not only did I stay with them, but the other German chappie from school stayed there as well, and we shared a bedroom. And the parson was rather inclined to come into our beds, but then war broke out.
Now, what do you remember about the day war broke out, or the immediate period? Well, were you in Retford at the time?
We just came out of church in Retford, and the air raid siren went. Probably heard time and time again before now. The air raid siren went, and everybody obviously took cover, didn't know what was happening. And I stayed with these people, who were very difficult people to stay with. The wife used to leave notes around the places, in this house we do this and that, and we are tidier than you are, and all the rest of it. It was not a particularly pleasant stay, whereas the people, the vicar with whom I stayed in Chute, I always had very nice holidays, although they were miles from anywhere. There was no electricity, no water laid on at all. You had to do lamps every night, and it was very pleasant.
Now, I mean, how did you react yourself? I mean, people were all milling about, not knowing. What did you think? I mean,
39. Well, obviously, I knew what was going to happen, but I mean, it was on the cards, of course. My parents knew what was going to happen, and they wrote to us, and. Can we just switch off a minute? I think one thing I must remember, and I was rather immature in those days, and although obviously I knew the implications of the war and the possible consequences and the fact that my parents were still in Germany and maybe could have got out if the war had come 3 or 4 months later, one had to accept the position as it was. And of course my own position was very insecure, to say the least, because I was staying with this parson chappie in Retford, where I was not all that happy. And then I was told I couldn't go back to school, which I was supposed to do to matric, because there was no more money. So eventually the Inter-Aid Committee decided that I should go to an estate in a place called Doddington in Lincolnshire. Doddington, D-O-D-D.
What was this estate?
This estate was a estate owned by a family called Jarvis, which is it's a stately home. It was a stately home, it's not that stately now. And they had a sawmill to deal with the timber from the estate. And my job was to be working in the sawmill, which didn't please me terribly.
Now tell me, what do you remember about working there?
And you worked there for a few days. I'll come to that. I worked there for a few days, and then one day the Mrs. Jarvis...
What were you actually doing? I mean,
I was helping to stack the wood and feed the stuff into the sawmill. And I didn't cut my fingers off. It was a customary thing to do. And I was accommodated in the farm labourers' cottages with somebody. I can't remember who it was with. Very basic. And not knowing, of course, what was going to happen after that. The war, of course, was... Well, there was a war, but there was nothing much happened, as you know. It was a phony war in those days. And one day, the lady of the house, Mrs. Jarvis, came to visit the sawmill. I don't know why, but she did, and she saw me there, and she started to talk to me, and I said, well, I wasn't terribly happy. And I had no idea what I had let myself in for, because I had no say in the matter. I was just sent, and that was the fait accompli, as far as they were concerned, in London. So she said, well, this is ridiculous. Come and stay with us in the house. So they invited me in the house. I lived like a lord. We had servants and cars and chauffeurs and shooting parties. And I do particularly remember...
Now, why you? Why they picked on you?
Well, because I didn't sort of fit into a sawmill.
What did you think of the lifestyle there?
What, in the sawmill or in the stately home?
In the stately home.
Oh, in the stately home. Well, of course, I had never experienced anything quite like it, but I must say I enjoyed it very much. It was a beautifully furnished home, although it was done with a little updating, and had huge grounds, and they had lovely dogs and used to take for a walk, and a little spaniel, which I rather took to. And I helped with... In September, it was apple picking time. They're picking apples and wrap them all up in newspaper and store them and all the rest of it. And I went out with a shooting party. I went out beating, and they had some very important visitors. And the most important one I remember was Lord Roger Keyes,
the officer
brigger. Well, I didn't remember him shooting. He didn't shoot very well. I don't remember that much, but he was very kind to me. And of course, afterwards, when the shoot was over, he had a big meal out and.
What can you tell? I mean, shooting parties, they haven't changed that much. But what do you remember of a shooting party?
There were probably seven or eight guns and loaders and about 12 beaters, mostly people who worked on the estate, and I was one of the beaters.
So what would you actually do? I mean, it's
beating. You just go around with a stick and hit the undergrowth in the hope that some rabbits or pheasants or something came up, and I looked after the dogs as well. And I enjoyed that, I must say. I didn't like the shooting, but the whole setup was enjoyable. I only stayed there. But then they said to me, well, really, you can't stay here forever. It's time you got a job.